Welcome to Firstline. My name is Aubrey Ann Jackson, and I'm a recently graduated physician starting my PGY1 year as a psychiatry resident this summer. In this podcast, we discuss whole person health and wellness through an osteopathic lens, holistically addressing the body, mind, and spirit. We also discuss topics important to medical trainees, including pre-med students, medical students, and residents. Thanks for joining me. Hello, everyone. I am recording this in December 2022. I realized that my last recording on this topic was back in May. And I think the reason why it's taken me about 6 to 7 months to record again is because I was feeling really discouraged and I really didn't know what to say. I didn't really have any meaningful updates really until now. I was really in a pretty low place, and I kind of wish that I could bring myself to speak about this and to record, but I think it would have made my worries a little bit more real to do that. But I am really sorry that I wasn't able to really share in real time all of the emotions surrounding that. So thinking back to June, July, June was when I was taking my board exams. July was when I started away rotations. And from July until early December, I was doing away rotations for medical school, which required me to move to a different place every month. And for most of the time, I was able to stay with my dad in Pennsylvania. That really meant that me and my husband were going to be apart for a bit. So it made trying to conceive pretty difficult because I had to be super diligent with tracking when my period was, obviously, but then also when my positive ovulation was. And let me tell you, let me actually pull out my tracker. My longest cycle was 63 days, and that was actually in March. But following that, I had, in May to June, I had a 39-day cycle, 35-day cycle in June to August. So I would really skip months. August to September, 43-day cycle. September to November, 52-day cycle. So if you're listening, you might be familiar that the average cycle length is 28. So I was almost double what that should actually be. So I was most likely skipping some periods and even have an ovulation, because really having regular periods is reassurance that you're actually ovulating. So I was most likely not ovulating during this time. And I was also taking Clomid all of these months. I think it was in June that I took Letrozole, and Letrozole, I never got a positive ovulation test, so I told the midwife that I worked with that I wanted to switch back to Clomid. So I was on Clomid really every month, every cycle that I had, including the most recent cycle that started in November with my period in November. So really, that just goes to say, so yeah, my cycles were long, so my ovulation dates were kind of unpredictable, because you can have a super long follicular phase, and then the ovulation is typically 14 days before your next period. So because my cycles were all over the place, I really did have to rely on positive ovulation tests, and looking at the past month and trying to predict when I might ovulate the next month was pretty difficult. But I think we made it work that my husband was able to come visit me wherever I was when I had a positive ovulation test and the day after. And at this time, I was still using a CVS or Walgreens or Walmart brand ovulation that have the blue line that comes up. And you have to wait until the blue line is as thick as the control line, which I'm so bad at gauging because I always think that they look the same to me, but then the next day it's a little bit darker and I never know what to expect. Also, I'm pretty sure that I was also having multiple positive ovulations a month, which should not be happening and is actually a sign of PCOS. For a while, I've been thinking that I might have PCOS just because I have very regular periods and had menorrhea, primary menorrhea, for quite a few years, and really no explanation at all for it. I had a very thorough workup when I was younger and then had another thorough workup back in the spring, and they didn't find anything, so certainly that was something that I was thinking of, even though I never got a real diagnosis for it. And it was back in, after I started my period in November, so I alerted my midwife of that, and she gave me a call, and she said, "There really isn't anything I can do for you left." I had a ultrasound done in early November to make sure that everything looked okay with my anatomy, and the only thing that came back from that was polycystic appearing ovaries, which, if you're familiar with the Rotterdam criteria, which is used to diagnose PCOS, since it's a syndrome, it's just diagnosed by having 2 out of 3 categories of symptoms. I had the anovulatory cycles, or the amenorrhea, and or irregular periods, and then I also had the polycystic appearing ovaries. The only part of the criteria I didn't have, which is probably why I wasn't diagnosed with it sooner, was having more of the stereotypical PCOS symptoms, like the acne and the hair growth and the weight gain. So because I've always been a healthy BMI, and actually towards the lower end of the healthy range of BMI, I was probably not really suspected to have PCOS. So after my ultrasound looked good, my midwife called me and she said, "There's nothing we can do for you. You might have atypical PCOS, or you could have something else going on, so I want you to see an endocrinologist," which, of course, when I scheduled with the endocrinologist, they couldn't get me in until April of 2023, next year. And she also wanted me to talk to my gynecologist about maybe continuing Clomid or increasing the dose of Clomid, and I was not scheduled to see him until January, so it just seemed like everything was being pushed off, and I really wasn't receiving the help that I really needed. But because signs were looking towards me having PCOS, I actually, in November, began to research a little bit more in my spare time, and actually found a really great podcast that I actually want to recommend. So it's called the PCOS Girls Podcast. They are based in Australia, and they really helped me through a very isolating time in my life. I do have several acquaintances that have PCOS, but I didn't feel comfortable enough reaching out to them and talking to them about it, and I really wanted to hear from people that have more of a holistic outlook about PCOS, so that podcast was really helpful to me. And they talk a lot about more alternative health and using more of your diet and supplements to help with PCOS and fertility. And the reason why I was drawn to their podcast is because both of them are mothers, and they struggled with PCOS but were able to conceive. Also, at the same time, when I did get that call from my midwife, I almost begged her, saying, "Please just give me one more month on Clomid before you give up on me quite yet, before I have to, you know, because I have to wait to see these physicians anyway." So she agreed to give me another prescription of Clomid, and I was researching that. Up until then, I was starting Clomid on day 5, and I never really thought any differently than that, but then I I looked it up about using Clomid and was really interested in, like, does it matter if I take it in the morning or the afternoon? But yeah, that actually doesn't matter. But what does is that it's actually sometimes recommended to start Clomid on day 3 instead of day 5. So I figured, well, it doesn't hurt trying. And actually, it's speculated that starting it on day 3 of your period instead of day 5 might actually increase the follicle count more so than starting on day 5, but day 5 might be correlated with better quality of follicles. But I really found quite a few examples online of women who successfully conceived starting on day 5 and on day 3. So I kind of just thought that, well, maybe day 3 would work better for me. So I started on day 3. And then from listening to the podcast, I learned about using different supplements. So one is that I started inositol, which was something that I also found evidence-based. I found evidence on that it can help people with PCOS to counteract insulin resistance, and it can actually be beneficial with fertility. So I started inositol supplements, and the pill that I actually take is combined with choline, which choline is really important during pregnancy, so it seemed like a no-brainer for me to start taking that. And then the other advice that I got out of the podcast was taking raspberry tea. So I started drinking raspberry tea. I only really had one cup a day, but it's recommended to take like up to 3 cups a day. But I just did one, and I did that during my follicular phase. So started right after I was done taking Clomid and drank that tea every day. And then instead of using the CVS, Walgreens, Walmart brand ovulation test, I just sucked it up and bought the really expensive clear blue ovulation tests that are completely digital, that make it very clear with a smiley face. A smiley face that blinks is one that you are positive but not quite at peak, and then a smiley face that stays there is your peak. And then after that, you do not test anymore. So I opted for that one. So those were changes that I made. So starting Clomid early, raspberry tea, and myo-inositol with choline. I ovulated on day 17 of my cycle, which was extremely early for me because I usually ovulate on the late 20s to early 30s of my cycle. So this was very early for me, and also pretty normal that it's somewhere between like 12 to 18 days is when women ovulate, so a few days after that. But I was so excited because I was also tracking the more positive ovulations even before that, but the peak was on day 17, so I was super excited about that. I think I really credit it to starting Clomid earlier, that maybe it caused an earlier ovulation, and then also the raspberry tea is supposed to help regulate when ovulation is too. And maybe the inositol as well, because it can help reduce insulin resistance, which could interfere with ovulation. So then, that was a few days before Thanksgiving. That was on the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. So I just had a really great holiday and was able to see a lot of family, which was really nice. And then I came back to my home in Virginia. So you're typically supposed to start your period 14 days after your ovulation test is positive. So for me, that would be December 6th. And on December 6th, I did not have my period yet, which happens to me every month because my cycles are so long. I every time miss my period, and every time have a pregnancy test that I take on the day of my missed period, and it's always negative. So I really didn't think much of it. Then 2 days later, I still didn't have my period, so I figured I would just test it. So I got again, the expensive Clear Blue pregnancy test. And I took it on that Thursday morning on December 8th, and it was positive. And it was positive right away. It's supposed to show up like within 3 minutes or something, and it was like 30 seconds went by, but maybe it just seemed like that. I don't know. But it was positive, and I had a residency interview that day. My husband was still sleeping, and I was trying to get him up before I had to go start my interview, and he always said, like, I want to sleep longer, and I must have came in trying to wake him up like 5 times. He did not know I was taking the pregnancy test. And eventually, it was like 5 minutes before my interview was supposed to start. And I was like, can you please get up? I need to tell you a secret. And of course, that got him to sit up. And he was still half asleep. But I told him that I had a positive test. And he was ecstatic. It was something that we've really been looking forward to. And yeah, we were just so excited. So now I'm about 6 weeks now. And last week, I had my beta-HCG tested with a blood test and confirmed that it was in a high enough range, and it was appropriate for how far along I was, and it was also more than doubling in 48 hours because I tested on Monday and then Wednesday. And so all of that looked really good. I have my ultrasound scheduled for January, and we won't be anywhere close to the end of the first trimester around the holidays, but we're still planning on telling our closest family, our immediate family only. Also, I'm just looking forward so much to having episodes about going through pregnancy, because I think that I have spent so much time digging through research and listening to so many podcasts, looking for advice on every little thing about pregnancy, and I'm not even really having any meaningful symptoms besides constipation right now and maybe a little bit of nausea, but I still am accumulating so much knowledge, and I really want to share with people what I wish I knew and just what I learned throughout this journey, and try to be a faster way for people to get that information, an easier way to learn about that. So I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah, it's just all really exciting. This is obviously my first pregnancy, and I did not think that this would happen. I am also just a month or two shy of being labeled infertile after trying for 12 months, because I have essentially been trying since February. I don't know if I would have been able to deal without some of the advice that I got from a podcast. So I think that just goes to show the magic of listening to podcasts, and I really hope that I can be the same source of incredible wisdom and advice without offering it as medical advice, just educational information to provide. I hope that I can do the same thing for many of you as well and pass it forward. I think that if you're suffering from things like PCOS or infertility, then my heart really goes out to you. I think a lot of people have a lot worse that they have to try for longer than me, but I think even trying for 10 months or so, it was very heartbreaking. And so I can only imagine what it feels like when people try for years and years and have to go through things like IUI and IVF. I can only imagine how hard that is and how taxing that is and how expensive that is. So I'm really glad to be where I am now, and I think that God's timing is perfect. And even though it seems like it's probably going to be a due date somewhere around August, which means that I'm going to be a very new intern or a first year resident of my residency training program that it's going to make taking time off pretty difficult, especially since most state policies and also the federal policy on maternity leave requires that you work somewhere for a certain amount of time, which is usually a year. I obviously don't qualify for that at all. So it will really be dependent on the program itself and what they're willing to do. And I might have to take my vacation time and my sick time and use that up for about 4 weeks of a maternity leave, which is obviously not ideal, but it's something that I might have to do. And my husband might have to take time off too, and we might have to stagger ourselves. And it really just emphasizes the importance of when I choose a residency program that is close to family that can support us during this time, because getting pregnant is one obstacle to get over, but then also having a newborn is quite another obstacle. So I'm really looking forward to the journey, and I know that we're just going to figure it out one way or another. So I am just so grateful, just overwhelming with gratitude, and just know that if you are suffering from infertility, that there are options out there, and chances are you have not exhausted all of your options. I thought that being on Clomid for quite a few months and just getting nowhere meant that I had to go straight to IVF. And I was kind of just using Clomid on and on and on to just put that off for when I can actually afford IVF. And I was just going to use Clomid forever until I learned that there are other options available. There's supplements out there. There's diet and exercise if you need to lose weight, which didn't apply to me, but there were, you know, herbal teas to consider, like my raspberry leaf tea. So it was very encouraging to me to learn that there are other options out there, and you never really exhaust all of the options. And not everything is black and white. If you can't conceive naturally, it doesn't mean you have to go straight to IVF. There's a lot in between. And I'm just so grateful for that realization, and I am almost in disbelief a little bit still, and think every time I go to the bathroom, I keep checking for blood. And I just find it to be too good to be true sometimes. And I struggle to look forward to August when I will have this baby, because I just fully believe that something's gonna go wrong, that I can't possibly deserve this. And this is the first time I'm saying that out loud, even though I did share some of these thoughts to my husband already, but it just seems like too much is going good for me. Something has to be wrong. Even though everything that I've gotten so far, the blood tests and everything, have been really great. And I'm, you know, not having any symptoms of an ectopic pregnancy or anything. And I'm otherwise very healthy, so I have a low risk of complications, but it's still, part of me is just expecting something to go wrong, which can work pretty well with preparing me for something so that when things go right, then I'm even more grateful for it. But it is kind of taking away some of the joy that goes into this incredibly exciting time. Even though I am still really excited, part of me is still waiting for something bad to happen. So I just wanted to normalize that point, because I'm reading on a few sort of anonymous forums on different pregnancy websites and on Reddit even, that women are having kind of similar thought processes, and I just wanted to normalize that because it's certainly something that I've been feeling too. And yeah, I'm also bracing myself for the nausea and vomiting and morning sickness fun that is surely going to happen soon. I have been feeling a little bit nauseous, but it's not nearly the morning sickness that I'm expecting. Though it seems like my family, like, it doesn't run in my family at all. My mom said that she didn't have morning sickness with me or my two sisters, and my sister, who just had a baby last February, she also did not have morning sickness. But I think that it's going well so far. I'm just looking forward to that ultrasound, and maybe that will make it more real for me. And also to hear that heartbeat is going to make it more real for me. Whoever you are listening to this, I have a feeling that a lot of my friends and families are going to want to listen to this series. But if you are just someone who wanted to hear my story, I hope you got something out of it instead of just listening to me go on and on about myself. I hope it maybe offers some encouragement for you, or maybe you can identify with some of my experiences. Maybe you've dealt with PCOS in the past or infertility, and I just wish you the best of luck if you're going on this journey also. And if you're currently pregnant, I look forward to sharing some episodes about different tips and tricks that worked for me, and using some of my background in medicine to support what I decided to do. So, thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to speaking to you soon. View the show notes for additional information about this episode and access the link to First Line's website. Don't forget to follow or subscribe to First Line on your favorite podcast app to hear a new episode every Monday. Thanks for listening.